3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast, the official podcast of the Seattle Mariners. Gary Hill here. Last podcast of the week. Podcast number 99 on the season. I feel like we should do something special for number 100 on Monday. Again, you can find the podcast now. It's new home. Mariners.com. Go to fans underneath /podcast. And you can subscribe there. It's on iTunes, everywhere else. You can get it in every fashion there. You can download it. You can listen there right on the site. You can basically do whatever you want to do with the podcast. It's right there. And thanks for being along once again. This is a good one. Aaron Goldsmith, play-by-play announcer for the Mariners, going to be by. We're going to preview the Washington series coming up this weekend. What a big series, too. Fireworks, Felix. It is Felix Day. Happy Felix Day. Great pitching matchups every game of the weekend series. So we'll break that down coming up. Also, I have some really cool history. I think this is awesome. We're going to talk more about it next week, too, because I don't want to give away too much of the story. But the Mariners' initial broadcast, their very first ball game, it had been thought for years and years and years that it was lost to history, that either wasn't recorded or the recording was lost, but it didn't exist for the longest of times. But Neil Scott saved the day. You know Neil Scott. He's been around for a long time broadcasting in Seattle. Does a great job with sports and everything else. So Neil Scott actually saved the day with the recording of the very first Seattle Mariners broadcast. I don't want to give away the story because he's going to be on next week. And he's going to tell the story about how did he do it? How did he come up with the initial broadcast for the Seattle Mariners? Their very first ball game in 1977. So we'll hear some of it next week. We'll also hear the story, and it's a great story, too, so I don't want to say anything more about it. But I am going to play a piece of it. I'm going to play at the end of this podcast the first, 10, 15 minutes of the pregame show. So the first time the Mariners take the air, you get to hear Ken Wilson open things up. You get to hear Dave Niehaus with the very first manager's interview. I mean, I think it's fantastic. I mean, I'm way into baseball history and Mariners history as well. And I just, especially for something that I thought was just didn't exist. I mean, here it is, a chance to listen to the very first Mariners broadcast. So I think that's pretty great. Obviously, no game yesterday, so we're not going to have a recap with an off day. But I'm going to try out something on you here that I do from time to time. Something I'm thinking about playing on the air tomorrow. I'll let you be the judge. You know I celebrate things in montage. I talk about this all the time. But Aaron Goldsmith and I, mostly Aaron Goldsmith, we've been collecting things opponents, observers have said about Felix Hernandez. And the list has gotten to be pretty impressive. I mean, a lot of Hall of Famers, you know, Don Sutton, Jim Palmer, Dennis Eckersley, you know, opponents in the clubhouse, what they've said after ball games, the day after facing Felix Hernandez, some national observers, Mark Simon from ESPN, Jason Stark from ESPN. I mean, just kind of what people have said about Felix Hernandez in the last couple of months. And what I did was just kind of put it all together, squish some highlights in there just for your listening pleasure. I kind of like how it turned out, and I'm thinking about playing it on the pregame show tomorrow. But you'll be the first ones to hear it here on the podcast, and you can tell me yay or nay what you think of this one. Regardless, I think I'll get you ready for a Felix Friday. Felix Hernandez taking the hill. I'll put C out, too, at Safeco Field coming this weekend. You can always tweet me when you're at the ballpark, too. I always like hearing from podcast listeners when they're at the ballpark. At the very least, I can at least wave, give you a wave. Or a Twitter hi. At Gary Hill Jr. You can always tweet me during the ball game. I'm always on there during the game. So say hi if you're at the ballpark this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. So let's do it. Let's do it right now. Let's get you ready for Felix Friday. Here's Felix Hernandez and the montage.
He is King Felix, and he reigns supreme.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
There's not a one player in this league that likes facing Felix. He is one of the nasty, if not the nastiest pitcher in Major League Baseball. He can get you to swing and miss with that changeup. He's scary. It's not fun. It's uncomfortable every time.
The King, holy smoke, has been outstanding, and his palace tonight is safe goal field.
I saw a guy last night that has been outstanding, and we may not have seen the best yet, with four pitches that he can make dart and dive and go faster and go slower. He is a complete pitcher, and I think he pitches with a quiet joy.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night as the King racks up his ninth strikeout tonight.
How he walks to the mound, I mean, he is so confident, man. He has got it going on. He really does, and for good reason. I mean, that's half of it. It's showtime, man, when he's pitching.
He now has 200 strikeouts on the season. Six consecutive years that Felix has fanned 200 or more, and no one has done that in the history of the Seattle Mariners. And the King is the king of the hill.
I wouldn't want to play that team in a one-game playoff with King Felix over there. I don't care how good you think your team is. He can shut down any offense.
Right down the middle, strike three called. 94-mile-an-hour flames from the King. And he is banging on all cylinders now.
You know, we found out firsthand, you know, why they call him the King and why, you know, he is as good as he is. And his changeup was pretty tough to pick up.
The windup and the pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike three got him with that changeup. And there is strikeout number eight for the King. They're jumping up and down in that left field corner, and King's court tonight. One away.
Once he got the lead, it was strike one, strike two, strike one, strike two. So it was like putting us in a hole. And when you go in a hole against a guy like that, it makes it for a tough at bat.
The 2-2, swing and a miss, strike three, a changeup. A venomous changeup at 90 miles an hour. Upton hacks right through that pitch from the King, who was fanned seven.
And I was 0-2 before you could blink an eye with two fastballs that were by me. And so, I'm like, okay, I'll get my two-strike approach here. And then he snapped off a slider, and it buckled me like I'd never been buckled before. And he struck me out on three pitches, and I walked back to Butch. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good.
Here's the pitch. Swing, and a miss, strike three, and a breaking ball.
Well, hitters don't have much of a chance. He does everything that you want to do. He throws a lot of strikes. He throws a lot of sinkers. He can strike you out if he needs to.
He can pass now. Tom Seaver on the all-time list. His 14th consecutive start, going at least seven innings and allowing two runs or fewer, and history might have just been made right here at Progressive Field.
I'm one of the few who can count myself very lucky to get to play with a player who I will look back when I'm an old man and tell other people that I had a chance to play with him, much like other people do with probably, you know, guys like Nolan Ryan and those guys. I mean, this guy is that kind of player.
Swing and a miss, and down he goes. Turned Flaherty into a pretzel as he swings through another nasty change. That is punch out number 10 for the King, and he is rolling. And look at him walk off the mound to a standing ovation here at Safeco Field.
What have you seen from the King this year?
He's the best.
The windup and the 2-2. Strike three called, and there is strikeout number 9.
This changeup looks like, you ever seen the cartoon Bugs Bunny when he was on the mound and he throws it and the guys are like, 1-2-3, you're out. 1-2-3, you're out. That's what it looks like.
1-2-3, strikes, you're out. 1-2-3, strikes, you're out. 1-2-3, strikes, you're out.
And there's number 11. Felix strikes out the side of the seventh inning, and he has flat out owned the A's tonight at Safeco Field.
I wouldn't let him get ahead of me. You know, I might be swinging early because his breaking stuff is devastating. You know, it always has been. He changes speeds, good breaking ball. So I'm hunting that first pitch. I mean, it's like maybe hitting off on Nolan Ryan or somebody like that. That, you know, they get ahead of you, then all of a sudden they start mixing it up, and I don't want him to do that.
Swing and a miss, strike three, and a changeup. And Felix Hernandez strikes out the side here in the top half of the fourth.
The last 12 to 14 inches before it gets to the plate, it's literally like someone steps on the ball.
Here's the ovation for the King.
There are really two pitchers who are on a Hall of Fame track. One is Clayton Kershaw. The other is Felix. And if you ask me who is closer, it's got to be Felix, doesn't it? He's 28 years old, already won a Cy Young. Seems like he's clearly going to win a second Cy Young this year.
So there it is. Are you ready? You ready for Felix taking the mound tonight against Washington? Should be fun. And to preview the National Series, here he is. It's Aaron Goldsmith.
To the sixth, all even at two, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here, hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love Katy Perry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night, so
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news, the bees are still there. You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field! Thank you very much!
Well, we get a chance to welcome in once again Seattle Mariners play-by-play man, Aaron Goldsmith. Aaron, I'm thrilled to have you on. You were on the very first one as a guest. You've been on, well, one way or another, you've been on every podcast so far. I was hoping this timed out a little differently. This is podcast number 99 of the year. I was kind of hoping you'd be the guest on number 100. You were so close. If it makes you feel better, you will be on number 100 one way or another. But still, 99, that's something, right? That's not bad.
Hey, you know, I just hope the podcast is around still for number 100. I mean, that's my that's the unfortunate thing is, I mean, I know it's you get renewed on a daily basis. We'll cross our fingers that tomorrow number 100 will actually happen.
That's true.
But I know it's cutthroat, the podcast industry. So let's cross our fingers and hope for the best. And hopefully let's make a gentleman's agreement that number 200, I will be an exclusive interview for number 200. Make it up to me.
Well, what I feel good about, I think, in my honest opinion, that this is the best podcast that talks about the Mariners that you can find on Mariners.com.
I think that's factually correct, Jerry. And if not for you, there would be none. So I think, Mariners.com owes you something out of all of it.
Yep, I'm beating nothing. So that's impressive. Well, seriously, thanks for having you. Thanks for coming on again. Appreciate it. And I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Washington, of course, has been an unbelievable team in the National League. And I don't know, I've been saying, I think right now, if you were to map it out, I think Washington might be the favorites to come out of the National League and get to the World Series. I know there's a lot of baseball left, but you just look at them in comparison to the NL. I mean, they are right there, if not the best team in the National League.
Well, there's no question about it. And you look at the numbers, at least, and what the Mariners' strength is also the strength of the Nationals, and that is pitching. And isn't it funny how Chris Young is basically just simply let go by the Nationals. He winds up on the Mariners' doorstep, and he has contributed to one of the best overall pitching staffs, certainly the best, one of the best rotations in baseball. And yet, you look at what the Nationals have put together, and it doesn't appear as though they really miss him all that much. That says a whole lot about what the Nationals have been able to do in terms of their rotation and also their bullpen at times this year. So I think when you look at the landscape of those three games at Safeco Field, the pitching matchups will make any baseball fan absolutely salivate. Zimmerman versus Felix in Game 1, and then Chris Young against Strasburg in Game 2. You're not going to find two more different pitchers in baseball than Strasburg and Young in terms of velocity. And Aníbal Acuña and Tanner Roark. Roark is having a really good year that probably nobody realizes outside of Washington. Roark's just kind of one of those names that not a lot of people know of right now. I can't wait for this series. And I think, to me, when you think about interleague play, it's kind of a love it or hate it type thing, Garrett. I'm interested in getting your thoughts on it because I know so many people don't like interleague, but to me, a series like this is one of those reasons why you crave interleague because you're having a chance to see three arms, especially an arm that has such name value in Strasburg, in your home ballpark that you normally would never see. So to me, that's so exciting. And for the Nationals to be able to see guys like Felix, like Iwakuma, and we always say that pitchers like those two don't get enough pub nationally. I think this works well for both fan bases to get to see some pitchers that you just don't normally get to see.
No, I think you make a great point, because I think the negatives are pretty obvious. It kind of wreaks havoc on the schedule and that sort of thing. But when you get a chance to see a pitcher like Strasburg or a shortstop like Ian Desmond that, you know, in American League cities, I don't think gets a lot of pub, but he's a really good shortstop, having another 2020 type season, rack up another one. And then, you know, a team like you see the Pittsburgh Pirates, you get to see Andrew McCutchen, you get to see guys like that that you don't get to see very often. And who knows, maybe guys like that stay with their clubs for their entire careers, and without interleague play, you'd never see them live. And that's what I think is still exciting about interleague play, is you just don't see these teams very often. You don't get a chance to see these players in person very often. And that's another reason I think this series is going to be fun.
Yeah, you bring up McCutchen. That's something that I kind of fall back on. You know, last year, the Mariners got to watch the National League MVP. We got to see him at his ballpark, and we got to see him, our Mariners fans got to see him at Safeco Field. And to me, that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
You look at this year, too, unfortunately, Mariners fans didn't have a chance to see it in our ballpark, but we saw Giancarlo Stanton swing a bat for three games in Miami, and this is one of the most electric hitters in the game, certainly when it comes to power. And to be able to say that you saw that in person and you got to learn a little bit about this guy is very gratifying. And there's a difference between seeing it on SportsCenter and seeing it in person, being there on the field for batting practice, and if it's at your home ballpark, fans being able to come in early and see that. And then you get great storylines like when Stanton and Trout are on the same field in Anaheim, like they just were. I mean, that's pretty cool stuff. So I think your point about the schedule is a very good one. It does make the schedule, truthfully, a little disappointing in some ways. I think it's a crime that you play 162 games and the Mariners only get to go to a place like Fenway Park for three of them.
Right.
That's too bad. I mean, this is a place that any baseball fan salivates to get to go to and watch a game at. I know the players love it, and that's not the only spot, but there's other great ballparks like Camden Yards you only get to go to one time, and certainly any of the other ones around the league. So the schedule is something that you will always fall back on as a negative to interleague play, but in pockets of time, when you get to see a guy like Harper or Desmond, as you mentioned, or Strasburg pitch live at Safeco Field, or McCutchen last year, those are the times where I think, the interleague play, there's really something great to it, because more of baseball deserves to see its biggest stars.
I'm excited about this weekend, too, because it seems like all season long the Mariners as a team have been able to rise to the occasion, and they've really played their best baseball against the best teams in baseball. They're below 500 against teams below 500. They're well above 500 against teams above 500. I'm interested to see this series, and, with how tough their schedule is in September, maybe in a strange way it plays to their advantage. I don't know.
I know you're talking about that a little bit earlier in the week, and as bizarre and as outlandish as it sounds at face value, I think there is something to be said about it. And it's really confusing, mind-boggling as to why the wins-loss record has stacked up the way that it has against teams over and teams under 500, like you mentioned. It's disappointing when you look at the schedule on paper the last three series and you see the fact that the Mariners played three consecutive last-place teams, and aside from a sweep in Boston, the Mariners lose two of those three series. One at home, like we just saw against the Rangers, and then one on the road in Philadelphia. The Philly series was disappointing, especially coming on the heels of taking two out of three in Detroit, and we know how important the games against the Tigers are and the games the Tigers play the rest of the way are for the Mariners in the wild card standings. But that was, I think, going into the off day, at least as a guy who watched the team every day, that was kind of a bitter pill to swallow. You saw Colby Lewis out there in game three, and you thought, this is a guy who has given up more hits than you can even count. And he did give up some runs, but obviously the Mariners just got in far too great of a hole too early in the ball game. So you bring in a team like the Nationals that has suddenly not been playing well. We talked about how disappointing a series loss to the Phillies was. Well, The Nationals did not fare well to the Phillies, losing a couple of one-run games, which is something that the Nationals had won seven in a row one-run games, including, what was it, five walk-off wins in about 6 days, or whatever the exact numbers were. So who knows exactly what form or what shape the Nationals will be in coming to town, but we know one thing, they can pitch. And the only team that pitches better than the Nationals is the Seattle Mariners. So from that standpoint, the first team that scores a run should probably win the ball game.
Well, to your point, the Mariners give up 12 runs in a game, yet you look at the standings the day after, or you look at the stats the day after, they still had the best ERA in baseball for the month of August, despite giving up 12 runs the game before. I mean, that's remarkable. It really is. That's amazing.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. And it'll be interesting to see the end of the season numbers for the rotation especially and where it fits in. And if we wind up saying, if you take out that one start, 10 runs over three innings, it would have been this. And obviously you can't do that. But for those who see this team every day, and let's face it, a game like that really stands out for the Seattle Mariners this year. And the numbers that the Mariners PR staff came up with, that was mind-boggling. I know you talked about this some, Gary, on the postgame show, but first time this year allowing double-digit runs. And what was it last year? Over 20 times.
It was 21, yeah. I mean, that is unbelievable. That's a huge difference. Massive difference.
You know, it's one of the things I wish more fans had were privy to were our conversations in the booth between innings when the commercials are playing and we have our headsets off. People would probably be interested to know that, but none of Rick and I have never heard a single commercial on Mariners broadcast all season because we always take our headsets off and we always talk about things in between innings.
Yeah.
And I had my headset off during one of the innings and inning breaks, and Kevin Krimen looks at me and he says, guess how many times an opposing team scored 10 or more runs against the Mariners last year? Because he heard the PA announcement in the press box, and I had it, and I was out of the booth. And I'm thinking, and he can tell I'm struggling, and he says, whatever you're thinking, go higher. And in my head, I was thinking eight times.
Yeah.
And so I go, 10. And he's at 21. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
That was my guess, too. He posed the same question to me, and that's what I said, 10. That's unreal.
It's funny how in a season like this for the Mariners, where we've seen this historic pitching, how a start like that, which I looked it up at the time, and it truly goes down as one of the worst starts in Mariners franchise history.
Yeah.
If your barometer is simply innings pitched and runs allowed, I mean, 10 runs in three innings is, we obviously know, is terrible, but in terms of the landscape of the Mariners is awful. One of the five worst starts of all time. I was shocked that Randy Johnson has the worst start in Mariners history in terms of runs allowed. He had a start of 11 runs. But I think it was Ryan Fierabend who resurfaced this year with the Rangers for a short while. He had a start where he gave up 10 runs, all earned, over, I believe it was an inning and a third. Which that, I think, is the worst start of all time. But it's funny how a start like
that
this, it's like, Gary, you probably had post-game show duty
that day. I don't think you're
wrong. We can go to the archives for that. Anyhow, a start like this that we just saw Wednesday, I mean, immediately, it's like it has a yellow highlighter just run right over it. And it sticks out that much.
Yeah.
But last year, it obviously didn't. I mean, it happened over 20 times. It's incredible. And I know this is something that we've hammered on time and time again, especially in terms of the bullpen, but just the turnaround. I mean, the difference in 1 year has been something that it's important that none of us broadcasters, fans alike, lose sight of, because it's just been remarkable.
It really is. And still, I mean, this month they have a 2.59 ERA and a chance again for the third time this season to have the best pitching month in history. I mean, their top two of all time are June of this year, July of this year, and depending on what happens the rest of the month, it could be August of this year. Top three in history for ERA in a month, all coming this year in the last 3 months. I mean, that says really everything you need to know about how good this pitching staff has been.
And one storyline that will be worth monitoring and tracking for the final home stretch here is Lloyd has said outwardly that he's at least mildly concerned about the rotation wearing down. We saw him push Felix back. Was supposed to go on Wednesday. Now has the off day to rest as well before today's start in game one against the Nationals. So Lloyd is very aware of this. And for a guy who is not a pitching coach, he has his thumb on the pulse of both the bullpen and the rotation, as we've seen, better than maybe any other manager in baseball does. And he has seen firsthand, and he's mentioned this before, he saw firsthand what was happening and has since happened in Detroit. And he didn't say it, but you know that he was talking about Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
Verlander accrued more innings, more pitches, by more than you can count, than anybody in baseball over whatever the stretch of time was, 4, 5, 6 years. And we're seeing it really start to come back and bite Verlander with the issues that he's had, especially lately, and really all season long if you just look at his numbers. So he wants to not only monitor guys like Felix, especially Kuma as well, for the stretch this year, but also the years from now. I mean, Lloyd wants to be here a long time. He knows the bedrock of his team is the pitching. And he has said before, one of the great things that he learned from Jim Leland is don't be so bullish on a win today that you sacrifice losing games tomorrow, the next day, and the day after that, and so forth and so on. We even heard him say in that one game at Fenway Park, that came down to the wire near the end, that he spread the infield out and he pulled the outfield in because they were either going to win it or they're going to lose it right now.
Yeah,
they're not going to extra innings because he can't take the ripple effect that would put on the bullpen in days forward. Lloyd is very decisive in matters like that. So how he makes sure to rest this rotation, especially during the final stretch, will be very important because, as he has also said, in August he was managing for September. Mm-hmm. And in September, he will be managing for October, which I thought was a great line. So he knows very well what to take.
Yeah, and lastly, I'm speaking of that, along those lines, I am really anxious to see what he does in September with expanded rosters and different guys with different skill sets at his disposal. I'm very anxious. I think he's done a masterful job with this team this year, fighting through some adversity, especially with the rotation, the bullpen. I'm anxious to see what all the added bodies, how he's going to manipulate things here in the last month of the season.
It'll be electric. Is that moment in the ninth inning when the game is tied and somebody gets, let's say it's Kendrys, Morales gets a leadoff single, and who comes out of the dugout but number 99 to pinch run at first base. And you know he's going to be running, get him to second. And with James Jones' speed, I mean, that's something that the Mariners have not had off the bench, obviously, in a very long time. A guy that is that explosive, either stealing bags or going first to home. I mean, he very conceivably could. We saw Ackley do it at Fenway. Jones is the fastest guy there is on the team. So adding that element, I don't think there's a whole lot of teams in baseball that have a guy that can run like Jones can in a clutch situation, and who also can obviously play in the outfield as well if you need a defensive replacement at some point. So I agree with you there. I think the Mariners get a bolster with Jones coming up. I figure Justin Smoke will come up, too, for a defensive replacement at first base. We know he's gold glove quality at first base. So I think Lloyd will have a couple extra tools on the tool belt there that he'll be able to pull on, especially when things get tight and down the final stretch.
That was the perfect way to end things. You bring up number 99 to end things here on podcast number 99. Nicely done. That is a professional broadcaster at work. Well done, and thanks for the visit.
Well, I got your podcast notes email, so we were able to work it in after all. My pleasure, G-Man. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Always love having Aaron Goldsmith on, as we now turn our attention to some Mariners history. I think this is so cool. 1977, the very first time the Mariners take the air. Here it is, the first few minutes of the pregame show before the very first Seattle Mariners baseball game in 1977.
The Mariner Watch is brought to you by the Pepsi-Cola Bottling Companies of Seattle and Tacoma, makers of Pepsi-Cola, and by Langendorf Bread, the old-fashioned white bread baked the old-fashioned way, very, very slowly. Langendorf Old-Fashioned White Bread.
Hello, everybody. everybody. Welcome to the Kingdom. And this, the American League inaugural for 1977, as we kick off Major League Baseball here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm Ken Wilson along with Dave Niehaus, and we're thrilled to be here tonight. It looks like it'll be a capacity crowd, or very near to capacity, of 59,095 here in this beautiful, beautiful facility for the great game of baseball. So many things will be happening here in the next 30 minutes prior to the first pitch. Dave will be along to talk with Mariner manager Darryl Johnson. The many, many dignitaries in town will be involved in the pregame ceremonies. Of course, the introduction of both the home Seattle Mariners and the visiting California Angels. And that'll all be a part of our Mariner Watch here this evening. The tradition, of course, of baseball here in the Pacific Northwest. So many communities have had this great game of organized baseball as we know it. And, of course, Seattle in particular, with the long history in the Pacific Coast League, the many names who have gone by here in the great Northwest. And tonight, a new era really begins with the Seattle Mariners, the team of the Pacific Northwest. The Kingdome, the $60 million facility tonight, its very first baseball game, the American League opener for 1977. So we're underway. A band playing from Bremerton here on the AstroTurf at the Kingdome. The facility just as spiff and beautiful as you would expect. And if you're with us here tonight in the Kingdome, we're certainly glad you're here. And wherever you may be in Washington, Oregon, Northern California, or Idaho, we're glad you're tuned our way, and we hope you'll be with us for all 162 games here in 1977. Well, Dave Niehaus will be along to get a preview of tonight's game in the season from Mariner manager Darryl Johnson when Mariner Watch continues in just a moment.
A smile can wake the sun up to what your world could be. And with every brand new moment, you're alive, you're feeling free. Make this day a celebration. Come and taste the Pepsi way. Life is what it should be when you have a Pepsi day. Come on, come on, come on, and taste the Pepsi way. Come on, come on, come on, and have a Pepsi day. Wrap a thirsty smile around it. Raise a Pepsi up and down it. Come on, come on, and have a Pepsi day. Come on, come on, and make this day a celebration. Come on, come on, and join the Pepsi generation. Come on, come on.
It's special no matter what kind of entertainment business you're in, and I guess baseball has to be considered not only a sport but entertainment business. And on opening night here in the Kingdome, it'll be an all-time major league record for a night game in an opener. My guest, the skipper of the Seattle Mariners, you've had a lot of thrills in your career, managing first of all in the minor leagues, perhaps putting on a uniform for the first time, certainly playing in the World Series, managing in the World Series. Where would this fit in that category? Here you are with a brand new club.
Well, David, I think the excitement that I feel tonight is very similar to managing in the World Series. I think that when you're a player in the World Series, the actual big thing, possibly a little bit more, but you were younger then also. And I'll tell you what, this is this city and this area is just tremendous. The fans create such enthusiasm, not only in myself, but my ball players. We're all just so excited that I can't even tell you. I really can't.
Any special instructions at all, especially to the youngsters that may be making their major league debut tonight? And there are a few.
Well, David, I don't believe that the way that these boys feel, any words would make them feel less excited or whatever to think. I think that I really wouldn't want them any other way. I think that to see their enthusiasm, and I know that their knees are going to be knocking a little bit and this type of thing, but I really wouldn't want it any other way, because it will wear off as we go into the ball game, and there is no way that you can stop these things from happening.
We talked to you the first week of spring training, the last time on the air. Now, here it is, opening night. Do you have about what you thought you would have? Do you have the ball club a little better than you thought you would have?
David, when we went into spring training, I think that the one thing that I know for sure is that we are better defensively on the infield than I thought we were going to be, mainly because Danny Meyer progressed so well at first base, and Bill Stein has just been outstanding as a defensive third baseman, which going in I thought would be rather average. The middle infielders, your shortstop and second baseman, are just about what I thought, because I knew that they were good defensive players, and they've showed me that they are good defensive players. But really, that was the biggest thing and the biggest improvement over what I anticipated coming into this day today.
Your pitching, somewhat hampered. Dick Pohl, a guy you're counting on later, and Frank McCormick, another young man who maybe has the best arm in camp, both on the disabled list.
Well, David, you're exactly right. Certainly those two boys not only had pitched well down there in spring training, but they had showed us that they were going to be in our starting rotation. At this time, as you well know and have already said, that they're on the disabled list. We have some other guys taking their place, and I always look at the optimistic side. These other two guys will get a chance to pitch baseball where possibly they wouldn't have. Maybe something good will come out of it for on down the line as months go by in this thing, to where we'll make a decision that will help our ball club for the rest of the year.
Truly, the Cinderella story of the night, Darrell, has to be your starter, Diego Seguí. Seguí, the most valuable player with the Seattle Pilots in 1969. Here he is 8 years later getting the start for the Seattle Mariners. 38 years young, and yet he has been so impressive in camp.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've known Diego Day for a long time, and to be honest with you, he throws the ball just as good today as he did those 8, 9, 10 years ago. The man earned the right to be the pitcher. He pitched very well in spring training, especially his last two or three times out, and I don't think that we could be in better hands than Diego Seguí.
You think even he, the veteran that he is, has butterflies tonight?
You better believe it, Dave, and he's no different than all the rest of those boys out there, whether they're 21 or 38, they all feel pretty much the same way.
Opening night at the King Dome, my guest, the skipper of the Seattle Mariners, Darrell Johnson, and we'll get back to him when Mariner Watch continues in just a moment. Speed, the essence of the game, and speed is what's so important to a ball club, and the Mariners have a lot of it. But without it, a team might as well open the cellar door and slide right down to the bottom. But at Langendorf, they don't know the meaning of the word speed, and for a very good reason. You see, Langendorf old-fashioned white bread is baked the old-fashioned way, slowly, very, very slowly, because slow baking improves Langendorf's old-fashioned white bread's taste and texture. Slow baking bakes the loaf more evenly, and slow baking makes the bread toast better and stay fresher. But even slow baking can't do a thing for a white bread if the ingredients aren't right. So Langendorf old-fashioned white bread uses only the finest quality ingredients. That way, you have the good old-fashioned taste of a good old-fashioned white bread. Langendorf old-fashioned white bread. The slower baked, the better. Skipper Darrell Johnson, my guest on opening night here at the King Dome. The King Dome. You've had a couple of days to work out. Oohs and ahs, platitudes from everyone. Has anything surprised you about it?
Dave, I think a little bit. First of all, I think that our playing surface is not quite as fast as I anticipated, which I like very much. I think that the ball carries a little bit better than I anticipated. Coming in here, hearing about the Houston Astrodome and how difficult it was to hit a ball out of their ballpark, this is not going to be a tough park to hit a home run on, especially down the lines and out into right center and left center. It will be a fair ballpark to both sides and so forth, but I think it's just a little bit easier to hit a home run here than what I anticipated.
Do you think your ball club, as the year wears on, will have an advantage because they play in the King Dome?
Well, I would say definitely yes, David, because if you haven't played in a place like this before, it's you're almost awestruck. I think that there's certain areas of the lighting and the roof and the ball come into play, which nobody, if they've ever haven't ever played in a dome before, they might struggle with it for at least a day or two, and we will get used to that ball up in the air in certain areas to where we can take care of it. It's no big problem to us, and I think it'll give us a little edge playing in here, yes.
A word about the opposing pitcher tonight, because he is a young man, although he be only 23 years old, I think one of the great ones playing in baseball today, southpaw Frank Tanana. Any particular instructions to your guys about Tanana and the way he'll try to pitch it?
No, because really, Frank does not set patterns on anybody. He's a highly intelligent pitcher for a young man, and you and I both know that he's one of the best pitchers in the game of baseball. I just hope that catching him a little bit early like this, that our hitters can go up there. I hope his control might be a little bit off. And I know that we'll be battling him out there tonight, and he'll be battling us. We'll just let the best man win.
Enrique Romo gets a start against Nolan Ryan tomorrow night. We don't want to look ahead, but he, again, has to be one of the real stories of the camp. A 29-year-old rookie making his debut tomorrow night. Has he impressed you that much? He has impressed me tremendously.
Well, the man came to me certainly as a complete stranger down to our spring training camp in Arizona. And I had reports on him from various people in our own scouting. I'll tell you what, the man is better than what they said in my eyes at this point. And I know darn well that he will go out there and pitch tomorrow in tomorrow's baseball game, and he will do a darn good job for the Mariner Ball Club.
People have asked you time and time again, how many games do you think you can win? I believe the Los Angeles Angels, before they were named the California Angels, in 1961 in their expansion year, won 70 games. And I believe that's the all-time record. I believe the Houston Astros in their expansion year won 69 games. Your theory in baseball is that, well, things will take care of themselves if they can improve day after day, week after week, month after month. Have they improved week after week in spring training?
David, it was amazing to me, and really, I feel great going in, and I know that spring training is different than the actual season. If we can improve in the time as months go by, the way we did as we came out of that camp down there, I'll be the happiest man in the world, because, again, those wins and losses will take care of themselves if we can improve, keep improving during the season as we did down in spring training.
Another man on the disabled list, he'll be in uniform tonight, will be introduced very shortly, Larry Cox. How's that split finger of his coming along?
Much better than we anticipated. By the time that he is ready to come off the disabled list, which I don't know the exact day, David, is the fact he is ready to go, right? Not necessarily today, but by that time, he will be completely healthy and ready to go.
All right, Ken Wilson will come along, and he'll give the starting lineup in just a moment. But before he does, let's have the skipper give the starting lineup here, the first game ever in Seattle Mariner history from top to bottom.
Well, we're leading off with Dave Collins, a switch hitter that's playing in the DH position tonight. We got Jose Baez playing second base. We got Steve Braun playing left field. We have Leroy Stanton playing right field. We have Bill Stein at third base. We have Danny Meyer at first base. We have Rupert Jones in center field. We have Bruce Bob Stinson catching, and Craig Reynolds playing shortstop. And as we've already said, Diego Segui is our pitcher for tonight's game.
Skip, thank you so much. It's an exciting evening for this reporter, and I know for the manager we're speaking to. Good luck.
I'm looking forward to it, and we can use the luck. Thank you.
Del Johnson, our guest from the Kingdom, and coming up, Ken will look at the baseball scoreboard. There was one game played this afternoon in the snow back in Cincinnati. You'll have a report on that when Mariner Watch continues in 60 seconds.
See you later!